I'm Ben Kiefer, and my guest is Scott Shaben, a Republican candidate for Iowa's U.S. Senate seat. The GOP primary is June 3rd. This interview is being recorded on Wednesday, May 21st, 2014. Scott Shaben, welcome.
Hey, how are you, Ben?
I'm doing well. Let me start off with a few questions here for you. Scott, can you give me an example of an experience you've had as a car sales manager that you believe has prepared you to be a U.S. senator?
Oh, geez. Let me try to think here. Gosh, I wasn't prepared for that question. Here's one that comes to mind. You know, again, you're talking about helping people and helping. You know, the job is to go to work for the people. Now that I think of this one in particular, I have two that are very similar to it, where we had people that had purchased used vehicles from us that we didn't, you know, we'd gone through them, and stuff happens shortly after people buy a used car, and in both cases, the customer could not afford to get the car repaired. It was some big repairs that needed to get done. I think on one of them, the transmission went out, and it was a younger single mom, and she's standing there with her mom in front of me, and I wasn't even involved with the transaction. However, I basically, since I got involved in it, you got to carry the ball and carry it through to completion, and you find an amicable solution, and in both cases, we ended up finding the people a different vehicle and put them in the right vehicle, the vehicle that was right for them.
Okay, Scott, I wanted to talk a little bit about employment. Scott Shaben, what do you think is the one thing you can do in the Senate to help create jobs in Iowa?
One of the biggest things is continuing to fight for the renewable fuel standard, continuing to fight for the renewable fuels industry. That's last I checked, that was around 60,000 jobs here in the state of Iowa. Those are real jobs that are bringing about $4 billion of household income to the people of the state of Iowa. So looking out for the people in the renewable fuels industry is one way. Another way is also working to try to simplify a tax code, make stuff easier for people to understand.
Let me follow up on the renewable fuels standard. The proposed changes to the renewable fuel standard seem to signal that the administration may move away from grain-based alternatives to conventional fuels. So specifically, what would you do in Washington to work in a bipartisan manner on energy policy that would benefit Iowans and still have a national appeal?
Well, when like you just said, you have to have a way to benefit the Iowans. You have to see the way that it can help Iowans. The current corn-based ethanol is and the soy-based biodiesel. Those are two big industries that are. Making a lot of ethanol for that industry. You're also ending up saving people money on gas. So I mean, that saves Iowans money too. You're saving between 50 cents and $1.50 per gallon. So, I mean, this is every little bit helps, but then I guess on the other side, on the green side, you also have to look at the on the wind with the production energy credits, and you stay with the production-based credits because they're the ones that help spur innovation and technological improvements.
Let's talk about agriculture policy. Even with a former Iowa governor heading up the agriculture department, farmers have been kept in limbo for years over new farm policies. How will you represent the interests of agriculture and rural communities in this environment and from a district that is heavily urban?
Well, The big thing is I always tell people that I'm bilingual in the sense that I can speak employer and employee. You also got to have somebody in the Senate, though, when representing the entire state of Iowa and visiting with senators from other states, somebody that can speak the language of what's important to them, and visiting with senators that may be more concerned with a more urban approach to things, and letting them know that what happens in the rural area also affects the urban area.
Do you have an example of that?
Well, first off, the food that we produce goes to market. That feeds the world. That's the easiest, most direct approach, our easiest, most obvious answer. Other things are is when the farmers sell their product, they buy things, whether it is cars and trucks. The automotive industry gets a lot of sales of pickup trucks to go to farmers. And not just pickup trucks, but all different kinds of trucks, from straight trucks to that sort of thing. These are all things that benefit the national economy. So there's more to agriculture than just crops and livestock, and somehow somebody's got to move those to market. How do they get to market? What are the vehicles that transport them? It's a big part of the nation's economy.
Scott Chabon, you're campaigning to join Congress to become a member of the Senate from Iowa at a time when approval ratings for Congress are in some of the lowest in history, hovering in the low to mid-teens in most cases. What's your explanation of how we got to this point where Congress is doesn't enjoy much favor among the population?
Well, a big part of it is you know, everybody wants to see everybody go, but everybody wants to keep who they got. When you look at the people that are in there now from Iowa, whether you're looking at Senator Grassley, Senator Harkin, they've been there for three decades. And if the people of Iowa wanted them to go, then they would have voted them out of office. However, the people of Iowa, time and again, felt that they were being represented well by those people. Other people would have, I'm sure, disagreed and would like to see Senator Harkin and Senator Grassley go. But a big part of it, though, comes from some of the partisan stuff and people not willing to work with each other, not only across party lines, but across background lines, whether you're talking people from Iowa versus other states. You have to be able to have and when you're looking at federal office, you have to have a perspective where you're looking at things on a national scale. Part of it not on the home side is having candidates that are not afraid to face their constituents, not afraid to come out and answer questions. So if you get people that do that, the satisfaction level would be higher, and basically making yourself accessible to the voters.
If you would become the Republican nominee and win this seat, you would be facing the job of a senator, which is approving of presidential nominees for certain posts. When do you think it's appropriate, Scott Chabon, for a senator to block a presidential nominee? In what cases would you do so?
If you think that somebody is not interpreting the Constitution, then you should feel free to block that nominee. The biggest litmus test, the biggest barometer, should be the Constitution. When you're looking at a federally appointed judge, you have to look at their history, and if they have a history where their interpretation of the Constitution, you might want to call into question. Well, then you might want to slow things down.
Okay. Well, there are liberal interpretations of the Constitution, living interpretations, and then are more strict fundamental interpretations. So how do you draw the line?
Where are you getting at there?
Well, there are some judges on any court that will interpret the Constitution as if through the Founding Fathers' eyes, or some say that the Constitution is a living document that needs to be interpreted in a broader, more liberal sense. When you say,
I understand both points of view. I mean, the Founding Fathers and their writings, and at their time, things were fairly clear. But also, I think that people don't give them the credit they deserve when thinking that they didn't have the foresight to imagine future possibilities. And when you look at some of the ambiguity that I think that they left out there for future generations, that would be to encompass or any future possibilities. I mean, when you're talking personal freedoms, freedom of speech and stuff, they wanted that to be as clear as possible. Freedom of speech is freedom of speech.
Let's move on to this question. Nearly every candidate running for office, certainly in the GOP, says they want to cut government waste and bring down the deficit. Can you name a program or a department that you would cut and tell us why?
Well, where do you start? I thought you were going to go down the military one there. And I'm looking at, just got done reading an article the other day about the Department of the Navy says that they want to put 14 ships, 11 cruisers, and 3 amphibious assault ships through the shipyards to get their to go through a massive overhaul and extend their life from the 2020s to the 2040s. And that would end up saving the federal government, I believe $6 billion might be more. But I don't have the article in front of me, but I know it's at least $6 billion. But yet the House Armed Services Committee is saying, well, that's going to compromise readiness, and we need to build new ships. So when you have the people in the fleet and the people on the front line saying, hey, here's a way that we can save money and not lose operational readiness, but then you have politicians saying that the military has it wrong, you have to call that into question. You have to take a closer look at it. That's one way. I mean, the biggest thing is visiting with these departments and figuring out when you talk to people on the front line, and it's not just the military. When you talk to people in every different department, and you talk to people in the civilian world, and you say, "Hey, how could your boss save money? What's one way that your boss could cut costs?" Everybody will give you ways for business to cut costs. Well, you have to visit with these people on the front lines and say, hey, how can, whether it is the Department of Education, the EPA, the NTSB, or the FAA, or, you know, any department of the government, when you visit with the people, say, hey, where could we trim some fat? They'll tell you. Not just the, you got to talk to more than just the higher-ups. You got to talk to the people on the front lines, and they'll tell you where ways to
cut. Well, I guess the question is, what program or department do you know of right now that you would cut?
Well, that's the one with that 14 ship overhaul. That's one that I would definitely look at to say, well, why are we going to be building new ships if we can extend the life of our current fleet 20 years?
Okay, are we spending enough on national defense in your view?
I haven't sat in on an intelligence briefing in over a decade, so to speak wisely on the issue, I would have to be able to know what's truly going on in the world, and then you figure out. I mean, that's a very broad question, but and I don't think anybody in this race can answer that intelligently.
Okay, let's move on to the topic of immigration. Immigration reform is an issue important to Iowa, but it has stalled in Congress. What immigration reforms would you support?
Basically, the biggest thing before doing anything else is securing the borders. I've been real clear on this you can't do anything until your borders are secured and until we know who's here and who's not here. Reining in the people that have overstayed their visas, using the Department of Homeland Security numbers, there's over a million people here right now, or there are over a million people who were here on visas that the federal government has no idea where they are right now. In 1996, we were told that we were going to get that straightened out. In 2004, we were told that we were going to figure out where these people are, and it still hasn't been done. So that's one thing. Encouraging programs like E-Verify is another thing that we can definitely do to help rein things in.
What about the real sticking point here in Congress about any possible path to citizenship for the 10 to 12 million estimated undocumented workers in our country?
You can't talk about that until you have the border secured and until you have a solid assessment of who's here and who's not here. Once that gets taken care of, then you can talk about either paths to citizenship, amnesty, any of that stuff. You can talk about it then, but until the borders are secured, there's no need to talk about it.
Scott Chabon, a couple more areas I'd like to ask you about. Let's talk about climate change. According to figures from NASA, 97% of climate scientists agree that climate warming trends over the past century are very likely due to human activities, and most of the leading scientific organizations worldwide have issued public statements endorsing this position. Do you believe the science that is out there among the vast majority of climate scientists?
I believe there's something happening, yes.
Do you believe that human activity is likely the cause of it?
Whether it's human activity or not, but that part I don't know. Whether it's American human activity or activity of people from other nations, that's the part to be determined. So before we go into other, we need to ensure that, again, we're on a level playing field with the world. Our engines in the United States, we've got some of the cleanest burning engines in the world. We have some of the most stringent environmental policies in the world, and to make things more burdensome for Americans when other people in other countries, you can't even see their sunrise because there's so much pollution, that's not fair to Americans. I mean, we're doing our part here. It's time for the people throughout the world to step up their role.
So a question like, should our government act? Should our government act on this issue? Your answer would be,
how would you act?
So is the answer no, or should it act in some way at this point?
Answer your question. You have to figure out, okay, what are you going to do? We can ask them all we want, but it's ultimately going to be their decision as to whether or not they're going to clean up their power plants and clean up their factories.
Okay, and finally, I want to ask you about the Affordable Care Act, also called Obamacare. The U.S. House has held dozens of votes to repeal or defund or otherwise dismantle the Affordable Care Act. President Obama will not sign legislation repealing, defunding, or dismantling this legislation, but the law remains unpopular, with most polls showing more people opposed rather than in support of the law. What are your ideas for revising the Affordable Care Act?
Probably going to be the same answer for everybody. Allowing people to sell insurance across state lines, or allowing people to purchase insurance across state lines, allowing small businesses to pool their resources, to pool their risks together. If you allow everybody on Main Street to be in the one pool versus everybody having their own individual risk pool, your risks are lowered and your prices are lowered for your insurance premiums. Those are real market solutions that have been out there from day one, that for whatever reason people keep saying the Republicans don't have solutions. Well, we've had solutions.
Okay, Mark, Scott Chabon, I'm done with my questions. I want to thank you very much for taking part in this quick interview on some basic policy positions. Scott Chabon, a Republican candidate for U.S. Senate seat open in Iowa. Thank you, Scott.
Hey, thank you very much, and I appreciate this opportunity.
Take care.
Thank you. Bye-bye.